Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be in. However you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd. Oh, and by the way, long conversation with Colin today during a morning walk. He had the walk, not me. Feeling good. Feeling good. Been back in the weight room. Threw about 350 on the bench press today. Feeling good. We got a great show for you. Tom Pelissero is going to join us, NFL Network insider. I think the big topic is going to be quarterbacks. Where, who will be moved and where will they be moved to? And suddenly now, Russell Wilson going to be in Seattle next year? I mean, what about Derek Carr in Vegas and Deshaun Watson? I almost feel like I should go to my inner Dick Vitale, right? Oh, let me tell you my quarterback's in the move. Quarterback's in the move. You got Deshaun Watson. He wants out of Houston. He's unbelievable. And Sam Darnold. Let me tell you about Jimmy Garoppolo, right? Like he always finds a way to work it back to, and Tom Izzo, and Mike Krzyzewski, and Roy Williams, right? Like I feel like we could do that for the potential quarterback movement. All right, also, Steve McClendon's going to join us. He one of those fantastic members of the Bucs defensive line. He's going to join us in an hour and a half. I'm going to ask him, one, what were they drinking yesterday on the boat? And two, were they at all surprised at the fact that Kansas City never adjusted to the fact that they couldn't block four with five? And Brandon Whedon will join us in the third hour. Good friend of mine, starting quarterback of the Browns, the Cowboys, the Texans. So we'll get his thoughts on what went wrong for Kansas City, what went right for Tampa, and who's more likely to get back to that big game, because maybe the answer will surprise you. Let me start, though, with Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr., Tom Brady. 7 rings, 10 Super Bowls, and whatever you want to say about Tom Brady, from Spygate to Deflategate, to everything in between, to leaving New England, our old crazy Uncle Rob Parker, he's the luckiest. Nobody's that lucky. At some point, there is something that you do that makes you better and your team's better than everybody else. Now, I'm willing to admit that Tampa team was uber talented, except for the fact that their quarterback kept turning it over last year. So you eliminate a bunch of turnovers and you bring in kind of professional winning mercenaries, right? Not just Brady, Antonio Brown, as much as a knucklehead as he is off the football field, on the football field, Pittsburgh was much more competitive when he was playing. And Rob Gronkowski, just to name a few. But there's something about who he is and what he does where he wins. But the problem with Brady is it was hard for us to relate to him, right? He's not the everyman. He's just not. It feels like he travels in different circles. Keep in mind, when Tom Brady was in New England, and this hasn't been discussed a ton, when he was in New England, there was a time in which he got a helicopter in and out of the game at Foxborough. Now, if you've ever been to Foxborough, and it's a 4-lane road, 2 in and 2 out, and it takes from the highway, it takes like an hour at the wrong time or after a game. It's the worst. It's in geographical location. It's a couple hours from Hartford. It's like 45 from Providence and like 45 from Boston. Like it's actually in the middle of nowhere, but in the center of kind of everything. Where it's, you know, but the problem is getting there and getting back from there is terrible. So Brady, in the middle of his prime, he had a chopper flying him in and out. And at some point, guys in the team were like, no, come on. Like that ain't, and Belichick had to shut that down, right? Brady had his own trainer. had his own Alex Guerrero, his own trainer in the facility. And it's like, he's got his own TB12 method and the avocado ice cream. And it's really hard. So yesterday, first he's tossing around the Lombardi trophy. Like, if you got six others, who cares? He gets off the boat and he was sauced. I mean, he was, do you guys know who Cooter Brown was? It's a great Southern expression. Is he drunker than Cooter Brown? Cooter Brown lived in the border of a free state and a slave state during the Civil War, and he couldn't decide which side he wanted to be on, so he just drank every day instead of deciding. Right? I think it's a real story, but I don't know. If it's not, it is today. And so the expression is he's drunker than Cooter Brown. Right? Drunker than a skunk. Pick it out. He was hammered. And he was that good hammered, right? He was that, man, I'm feeling good. Feeling good. Like I should, right? Like, he had that perma-grin smile. How you doing, man? Love you, bud. And there's two parts to it which are, I think, an important takeaway, right? One, who you are as a drunk is who you really are. Angry drunk? Angry guy. Funny drunk? Funny guy. You know, when you try and get all lovey-dovey, that's who you are. Right? If you're a quiet drunk, you're kind of a quiet guy. Everyone's different. And it does. It takes away all of the different falsities of who you pretend to be. Because it's really hard in this world to be who you want to be, to say what you want to say. But the other thing is this. Tom Brady was not terribly likable for a long time. And there's a lot of people who simply rooted against him on Sunday and can't watch the reaction on Monday because, like, I'm so done with Tom Brady. And then you watch him and he's coming out the buzz. Hey, man. How you doing? He's smiling. He's got a couple of his, like, henchmen, like, pull him around. We don't want to get him in front of a hot mic and say the wrong thing. He even tweeted out, nothing to see here, or actually nothing to see her, H-E-R, just a little avocado tequila, and of course some misspelled words. It's amazing. It's like the first time ever, a relatable moment. Like, yeah, dude, I've been there. I've either been there or I want to be there. Who doesn't want to be on a boat with Tom Brady having a couple of cocktails? And day drinking is a different type of drinking, kids, as we all know. And, you know, through 20 years in front of us, like, Tom Brady was a guy who, he grew up in the burbs. He went to Michigan, kind of elitist school. It's kind of elitist feel to the Patriots. They think they're better than all of us. They think they're smarter than everybody. Right? His hair's better than my hair at the same age. His teeth are better. His skin is better. Right? Like, he keeps getting younger. We keep looking older. What in the holy hell is going on with Tom Brady? He's married to a supermodel. I can't relate to any of these things. But then I see him day drinking on a boat, and he got some either slobber or water or sweat dripping off him, and you're like, Tommy! Hey, Tommy! Oh, and I'm not sure if you saw this. Go back to the video. Go back to the video. He's wearing like a knee sleeve, right? He's wearing shorts and a knee sleeve. Now, look, I'm willing to admit it's a job hazard. He plays football in the NFL, and even though he had no grass on any part of his jersey, he might have gotten hit during that violent game known as the Super Bowl just 2 days previous. But the idea that Tom Brady, who knew he was going to be on camera, always trying, you know, and he throws on his TB to TB t-shirt, whatever, some shorts, and hold on, hun, I got to throw on this knee sleeve for protection when I'm on my boat. Oh my God, he's a dork. Tom Brady could have had 3 Zimas and been hammered, and everybody would be like, you know what? Good for him. Good for you, Tom. You got out of New England, you're a little older, you get to Florida, you feel the sun, you win a football game, you throw in a knee brace, you have a couple of Zimas, good for you. You know what? You know what the truth is? people like authenticity. You know, I mean, look, that was it's so much so that sometimes really inauthentic people who purport themselves as authentic actually end up winning for a period of time. Ultimately, it always gets exposed, right? But I mean, we've seen that in politics, that people just, you don't necessarily like what they say, but the idea that they're saying what they actually think, that's what we yearn for. So many things are packaged and prepared. And like, you know, look, we'll talk about Russell Wilson, but I think Russell Wilson, there's a guy who there's nothing wrong there, but it doesn't feel like you're ever getting the real Russell Wilson. It just doesn't. And I don't know if we've ever gotten the real Tom Brady until yesterday. Why? Have a couple of sips of cocktails, have some tequila midday in the Florida sun, and all of that goes away. All of that image goes away. This is who he really is. Smiling, happy, knee brace, carrying his daughter, 7-time Super Bowl champion. And you know what? There's a bunch of you who saw that video who said, damn it, I kind of like Tom Brady now. I can't believe I'm saying, I hated him. And I kind of love him and wish I was on the boat with him. Tommy, take a couple of Advil before you go to bed. Drink a bunch of smart water. Okay? Call me, Tommy. Speaking of Russell Wilson, who's the real Russell Wilson? And did we see the real Russell Wilson come out this week?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Everyone wants to keep their home and family safe, whether it's from a break-in, fire, flooding, or medical emergency. Simply Safe Home Security delivers 24/7 protection. Visit simplysafe.com/Colin today and get a free security camera. If you missed the Dan Patrick interview with Russell Wilson, let me give you a kind of a quick quote from it. A source told me, this is from Dan Patrick, after his interview, Dan said, a source told me that the Seahawks management is not happy with Russell Wilson and his camp for taking this to the media. You wonder if they're going to be able to coexist. The current situation is unsustainable. That's what I was told. That's Dan Patrick. And look, DP, I don't know how many of you guys listen to that show that precedes Colin's show here on Fox Sports Radio and throughout our Fox Sports Radio affiliates. But he's always been a great interviewer, and that was a great interview. But he also has started to tell us all the secrets that he knows, like all the Big Ten stuff that was going down. He was on top of as well. That's interesting. This was former Seahawks Hall of Famer Walter Jones on Russell Wilson going public with his problems with how Seattle is handling things.
I think you should leave that in-house. I think once you put that out there, now everybody thinking that you don't appreciate the guys that you play with this year, even though you're where you need to be every year. You know, this team is right around that mark every year. So you have to credit that to Russell Wilson and the guys around him. But still, again, once you call those guys are like, wow, really? Like, we go to war with you every week. You know, we're trying our best not to get you hit. But still, again, you know, for you to say that publicly, you're putting yourself out there on front street, and now you got everybody, like, now talking about what you're saying. So you always have to be careful.
So there's a lot of discussion about, well, the offense. The interesting thing about the offense and the thought that he wants to have more say about player personnel is that, look, Brock Huard, who joined us yesterday in The Herd, Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin, had this to say about Russell speaking out about the offense.
By all accounts, from what I had heard behind the scenes, this was the guy, Shane Waldron from the Rams, that Russell was most excited about. They did the same thing, and when push came to shove, from the people that I talked to behind the scenes, you know, Russ was super excited about this, getting a guy that, you know, minimizes some of the offensive line challenges.
Right, so you got to help pick the offensive coordinator, one of 14 guys. You got to the playoffs, and now you're airing dirty laundry. Like, look, I don't know how many places you've worked. I've worked at three different networks. There are absolutely things I would like to see changed. You know what I don't do? Is I don't use this thing to try and make those changes. Because though, you know, each team is different, still a team. You know, it just is. And I think this is who Russell Wilson really is. There's an article in GQ with he and Ciara, and he's like, we wake up and we're so blessed to be together, to get to spend time together. Like, dude, enough. Enough. This is who he is. The NFL, especially the players, like, I think as fans, sometimes we struggle to see it because so many things are packaged and we want to believe things, whatever. But the NFL, much like the NBA and Major League Baseball, they know who the real dudes are, right? They know what guys really are. And if you look at Seattle, remember those defensive dudes, they had a problem with him. You go back, and now Richard Sherman, obviously they act like they're close, and but when they were together, they weren't really together. There was the defense versus Russ, and you had to treat Russ with kid gloves, and you had to handle him a certain way, and you couldn't mention the fact that they were a team that protected him, that limited how many times he was going to throw the football, and then late, they returned, and he got to reap the glory of it. No one has ever actually called out Russell Wilson for the Malcolm Butler interception. Have you ever noticed that? The only thing ever said was, why didn't they hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch? And I will grant you that he's a 5'10", 5'11" quarterback, so he can't see, and maybe that's why that ball was high. But if that ball was low, did you notice the route that Antonio Brown ran when he scored a touchdown late in the first half? Did you notice that route? Okay. Did you notice where the ball was placed? The ball was placed low, like kneecaps or below. And the reason you throw it there is if Antonio Brown can't catch it, nobody can catch it. Right? It's a different route and a different concept. Okay? But when Russell Wilson threw the ball that was intercepted by Malcolm Butler, if it was thrown at the same angle and trajectory as the Tom Brady passed Antonio Brown, guess what doesn't happen? The Patriots don't intercept the football. Nobody's ever said that. But again, that's part and parcel to that's who Russell is. He wants to be immune from criticism. He wants to be above reproach. He wants it done his way. And now you're getting a little insight into, like, Walter Jones, like, he's one of the greatest linemen in the history of this sport. He's also a lifer as a Seahawk. Like, really? You're going to call out? Because he went to the local media and said, I'm tired of being hit. And said, he wants to say in player personnel. What is he saying? He's saying, my offensive line sucks. Get better players. They're getting me hit. Did you hear any of them come out and say, Russell holds the ball too long? This is who Russell really is. And this is why guys struggle to play with him or give him the respect that his play probably deserves. Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Music, what do you got, buddy?
Always good to be here with you, Doug. Let's start with some NBA here, actually. It was a win for the Lakers and LeBron James, their sixth in a row, after LeBron hit a late three to force the game into overtime, and then he ended up actually breaking up the inbound play at the end of overtime to secure the win. It was their third consecutive game that went to overtime, so it was also the third consecutive game that LeBron James played over 40 minutes.
Well, look, I don't think, is that suboptimal, right, that you want your 36-year-old superstar playing that many minutes? It's suboptimal. I would also tell you, though, that I don't think they're practicing, right? So this is his workout. This is his cardio. He's lifting four games as well. Like, he comes in, that's what he does. He does probably nothing else outside of that. And in all honesty, the part that's hardest when you get older is not the playing. It's the starting and stopping the sitting, and this eliminates some of it. But I also think that there's a couple other things at play here. One, they are doing a little bit of the Tim Tebow, right? They're getting credit for putting out a fire that they started. Right. Like, oh, Tim Tebow came back. Well, why do you think they were down 2 touchdowns? Because Tim Tebow stinks, right? And they're asleep at the wheel the first 10, 15 minutes of the game. And two, I think that LeBron has taken on kind of that Tom Brady, hey, at the end of the day, we want to win every time we're out there. Let's also mention that they're playing against some of the worst teams in the league, and this is a dangerous path to go down. But I don't think the minutes are prop. Like people say, well, you play that many minutes, you're going to get hurt. Like, yeah, I actually think you're more likely to get hurt if you sit for big chunks of time and then get back in the game. That's when it's harder on an older body.
Yeah, and they were playing once again without Anthony Davis, and LeBron right. James continues to keep playing games. No load management this season for LeBron, despite
I think he will smartly. You know, there'll be some load management here. There'll be a pulled hamstring. There'll be a knee strain at some point.
What about back tightness? That's always
back,
a good one.
Oh, back tightness is
yeah,
good.
Back tightness. We'll wrap it up here with some NFL, Doug. As we already know, Dak Prescott played last season on the franchise tag, suffered a season-ending injury. Kirk Cousins has played on the franchise tag for two seasons in a row, going back to his time in Washington. He told Pro Football Talk, he talked to Dak about some of the benefits, quote, "The franchise tag can be your friend. It can help you if that's the route you choose to go. I think Dak's in a great spot now. Everybody knows he can play. He's an elite quarterback. Really, the ball is in the Cowboys' court and what they're going to do going forward, but I think it's a no-brainer. Dak's the real deal and is going to have a great career going forward. I think he's in a really good spot." A little different tone than what most people or most players will say about the franchise tag.
Correct, because he's right, and he knows he's lived it, right? Franchise tag 2 years, then free agent, all three guaranteed money, and then had to have his deal reworked and got extension, even though I don't know if they love him. They like him in Minnesota. Like, there's a dude who knows the business, and they're really the same guy. I believe that Dak and Kirk Cousins are the same guy. I think they're good, not great. They're both fourth-round draft picks, right? And they're both guys that have, if you use this system, it works for you. And to people who say, well, like, you know, the problem with the franchise tag, what if you get hurt? Dak got hurt. And guess what? He'll still get either a new contract or play in the franchise tag this year. It's it's short-term, huge guaranteed money up front, and it puts the team a little bit of a pickle because it hurts their salary cap number. Kirk Cousins is right. He's lived it, and something I've been saying for a long time. And that's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
All right, Tom Pelissero joins us, NFL Network reporter. And kind of interesting, Tom, on Twitter, you threw out the possibility that if Godwin were to leave via free agency, Odell Beckham Jr. could be an option in Tampa because he's the one he brought the goat-haired cleats to Brady, bizarrely, a couple years ago. Is Tom Brady now the destination job for wide receivers in the NFL?
Well, I think certainly there's plenty of reason to believe that Tom Brady isn't going anywhere anytime soon. I think that a year ago when you looked at this and you had signed a 2-year, $50 million contract, you naturally had questions about how long is he going to be around. You're looking at a certain type of player when you're talking about, you know, guys going there on 1-year deals, which is really what they did. There wasn't this cavalcade of unrestricted free agents that went to Tampa. If memory serves, I think Joe Haig was about the only UFA that they signed after Tom Brady last March. But then, you know, when Leonard Fournette became available, he went there. Obviously, you know, when Antonio Brown was looking and he had a couple of options, Seattle was the other one. He chose to go to the Bucs. Now what you might have, based on Brady having success in Tampa, and again, talking like a guy who, you know, he's talked for years about playing until he's 45. I'm not sure 45 is the cutoff for him at this point. So maybe you've got a little bit more of an idea as guys are heading toward unrestricted free agency here that, you know, if you go there and you sign a multi-year deal, you're not there for 1 year with Brady and then stuck with whoever follows him. Maybe you've got a little bit more time. And certainly I think that, you know, with the increasing NBA mentality that seems to, you know, take over certain players here, you certainly could have a lot of interest in people going to Tampa.
Tom Pelissero joining us here in the Herd. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. What do people around the league think of Russell Wilson's comments about wanting to have more of a say in player personnel and then later said he's tired of being hit?
Well, on the second part about, you know, being tired of being hit, and, you know, he's talking specifically there about, you know, his offensive line, and he needs to be protected better. If you really break down the numbers, and I asked NFL research, our people to do this, you know, Russell Wilson held the ball longer last season or over the past four seasons than all but like three quarterbacks in the NFL. And when you look at his average time to sack over the past few years, it's never been in the top half of starting quarterbacks. In other words, he's getting sacked because he's holding it a long time, because they do have a vertical, you know, strike passing game, and obviously they place a high premium on not turning the ball over. But it's not like he's, you know, it's 2.5 seconds and he's getting clocked back there. No, it's that he's extending plays and he's running around, and that's kind of the play style that Russell Wilson's had for a long time. So there's that piece of it. In terms of everything else and how teams are looking at the situation with Russell Wilson, I can tell you there's, you know, more and more teams over the past few days amidst the media hoopla who have called the Seahawks and done their due diligence trying to figure out exactly what's going on. And in talking to those teams, nobody has gotten any indication that the Seahawks are inclined to trade Russell Wilson. He's under contract for another 3 years and $69 million. They just hired an offensive coordinator like a week and a half or 2 weeks ago in Shane Waldron, in which Russell Wilson had a huge voice in that process. He's a big reason that Waldron, who's got a passing game background with the Rams, is there. So it's definitely unusual in terms of the way that this has become public and some of the things that that Wilson has said. You know, at the same time, you know, he just watched Antonio Brown win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady. He's always, Russell Wilson's always pushed the Seahawks more star power. I need, you know, even better players. We got to get some big names around me. Well, you push for Antonio Brown, AB signed with the Bucks, AB wins the Super Bowl. You also can understand where, at least in Russell Wilson's mind, this validates the idea that when he's pushing for some of these star players, they should make every effort to go get him.
That's what I felt and I had heard is that specifically watching Antonio Brown, and my guess is that they said we can't sign him, right? Like, just can't sign him. And that's really what it was more about than anything else. Now, the problem is that when you call out your offensive line's like, wait, what? You hold the ball and run around back there, and you're worried about getting a hit? I felt like the Antonio Brown thing was a big issue because the only two guys he worked out with were Tom Brady and Russell Wilson, and, of course, he signed with Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Pelissero joins us. Let me ask you about Carson Wentz. What's the latest on the Eagles, who are clearly trying to get Carson Wentz out of their locker room?
Well, really, they're still trying to get an offer that you know, merits them moving him. You know, Howie Roseman, when he was making the initial round of calls, was looking for a trade package that was comparable with what the Lions had just gotten for Matthew Stafford. Now, that was a unique deal, of course, involving the Rams, who wanted to move on from Jared Goff. They had to find somebody to take on that fully guaranteed salary because they had no offsets, and there was no way they could have made the Stafford trade without it. That influenced the trade compensation in terms of two future first-round picks, a third this year, and then Goff, who for the Rams was a dump, but for the Lions is their starting quarterback in all likelihood for the next 2 years. With Carson Wentz, the Eagles, obviously, based on having these conversations, are willing to eat what would be, I believe it's a $33 million rock on their salary cap in 2021 in terms of dead money. That's the money they've already paid. They don't have to keep paying him, but they would carry a significant dead money hit for him. They obviously like what they've got and what they saw down the stretch with Jalen Hurts. But if you're the Eagles and you're Jeffrey Lurie and you're a new coach, Nick Sirianni, as well as Howie Roseman, the question becomes, you know, what are you willing to take for Carson Wentz? Again, they were looking for multiple first-round picks. They have not, to this point, found anybody willing to pay that, which is understandable. I mean, Carson Wentz, 2017, prior to the knee injury, was playing at an MVP caliber level. Then, over the past few years, he's had a concussion. He's had a back injury. This past year, he just didn't play well. And that wasn't all because of Carson Wentz. They had this, you know, Frankenstein type of offensive staff with a lot of different voices. They had really no philosophy. They had injuries on the offensive line. They had injuries to Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson. He had no consistency in terms of weapons, all of which has led, you know, Carson Wentz, from his perspective, certainly, to think that a fresh start might be beneficial. But again, you know, the Eagles paid Carson Wentz just a couple of years ago, they're going to have to eat a huge dead cap money to move on from him. You know, what is that threshold that you need to get past? Obviously, they haven't passed it yet because Carson Wentz has not been traded, but we're also still, what, about 5 weeks away from the start of free agency. Even though that Stafford deal happened really early, which is pretty rare, not unprecedented because Alex Smith was traded Super Bowl week, but pretty rare for guys to get, you know, high-profile players to be traded in January. You've still got a while here, and that's one thing that I've heard from other teams, which is just, what's the rush? Everybody's still in cap planning mode right now. You know, you haven't even gotten a look at the draft class yet. There's a lot of moving parts. They've certainly put out signals that they want to move more quickly with Carson Wentz, but if they don't feel like the trade compensation is there, then it would make sense for him to continue to to poke around and to wait.
The problem with that one, Tom, is, and I liken it to real estate, right? Like, if you list something on the market for way too much money, then it sits on the market. Now all of a sudden you're like, well, wait, why has it been sitting for that long? Then you end up taking below the actual value that you should take for it because you kind of chase the market. Like, once it's out there, they want him gone. He's not coming back to Philadelphia. That ship is
well. And the other piece of it is too, because you've got this kind of unprecedented landscape right now, where there are so many teams that have, in some regard or another, a possibility of trading their quarterback. You have potential retirements. You have free agents. You have, you know, half the league right now doesn't know who their starting quarterback is going to be in 2021. But the longer you wait, the more some of those teams might pursue other deals, might fall in love with guys in the draft class, might, you know, believe they can get better value elsewhere. To your point, yes, when you put such a high price on Carson Wentz, if you don't move on that price, which, you know, again, the Eagles have time here. It's early in the process. They can afford to wait. But at some point, teams are going to move on to other options. And what you don't want to happen is, you know, whoever's got the best offer on the table now thinks they're not going to get it done and trades for somebody else. Now you're really left in a difficult position. And so, I would think, and there have been indications that the Eagles are motivated to move quickly here. They've just got to be able to get compensation that merits them actually pulling the trigger.
Tom Pelissero joining us from the NFL Network. All right, where are we with the Texans? Their president resigns yesterday. The siege continues. Where are they in terms of Deshaun Watson?
Well, let's start with some of the changes that have been made within that building. And I certainly understand that there's been a portrait painted of an organization in dysfunction. And there's absolutely truth to the fact that there was a lot of stuff in that building that's needed to be cleaned up. But it's not abnormal when you're talking about equipment managers and other football staffers. It's very common for new general managers to make changes there. In terms of the team president, Jamie Roots, that was something that, you know, I believe that a lot of us had heard behind the scenes was in the works for weeks, if not months. There, of course, was a very unusual process run in which they hired a search firm that worked for several months and lined up all the interviews, and then they went a different direction. And Cal McNair hired a guy, Nick Caserio, who he had wanted to hire a year ago. Nick Caserio, you know, it would be different if this were some totally off-the-wall guy that nobody's heard of. Right. Nick Caserio is on everybody's list. He's one of the highly respected guys. He's extremely sharp. He's worked for two decades in a winning organization in New England. So you got a good GM. You ran a diverse head coaching search that lands with a surprise candidate, no question about it, David Culley, somebody who's been on the list for the Fritz Pollard Alliance, medical football operations in recent years. He's a known commodity. They're the only team in the league to hire a black man as their head coach in this cycle. They then went out and hired a bunch of assistant coaches, namely Pep Hamilton as the quarterback's coach, in addition to retaining Tim Kelly as the offensive coordinator, all with an eye toward Deshaun Watson being their quarterback in 2021 and beyond. Now, from Watson's standpoint, he's made very clear that he wants a fresh start. He requested a trade several weeks ago. He wants out. For the Texans, they have time on their side here. There's going to be, of course, you know, the public stuff and the cryptic social media tweets and all those things. If you can stomach that, you can afford to wait out Deshaun Watson here. You have, rights in terms of, because he signed a contract extension in September. You can fine him if he doesn't show up for minicamp or training camp on a daily basis. If he eventually says, I'm going to retire rather than playing for you, you can go after $21 million in bonus money. Everybody hopes that it doesn't come to that. David Culley has reached out to Deshaun Watson. Watson, at least as of a couple of days ago, had not gotten back to Culley. They're trying to mend that relationship, and you've got some pressure points coming up in terms of the start of free agency, in terms of the draft, where you're going to be thinking, okay, you would expect teams would circle back at those points. But to this point, there's a lot of teams that have reached out. Some of them have heard nothing, Doug. The ones that have heard from the Texans have heard a very firm stance, which is Deshaun Watson is not available.
Tom, great stuff as always. Really appreciate you joining us, and thanks so much for being our guest in the Herd.
You got it, Doug.
All right, Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network does an outstanding job and gave us kind of the truth to what's really going on in the quarterback in the quarterback market. All right, coming up next. You know, look, Andy Reid is a beloved figure in the NFL and the NFL media. But if you didn't see the difference between Andy Reid and Bill Belichick Sunday, I will point it out to you next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. The most life-changing sleep is about what's underneath. Inside a Casper mattress, 1,501 perforations create a cooling system so effective you won't be awake to notice. Only on a Casper mattress, only at Casper.com. Steve McClendon, defensive lineman, Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, joins us in 20 minutes on the show. I will tell you the truth to recruiting in sports, in life, and in the NFL at the top of the hour. We got a great show for you. By the way, just made some avo toast during the break. And music, Ryan Music, who's my producer, who is a very talented, very young producer. How do you take your avo toast? Do you have a specific bread and topping for the avo, or do you just do you not care?
I do not discriminate when it comes to avocado toast. I am welcome to the many forms that avocado toast can come in. Although I do like a good piece of sourdough. So
that's what I have. I have sourdough. I have sourdough. Sourdough, and then have you ever had the bagel, everything bagel seasoning on top of it?
Yeah, quite good. Yeah. Quite good.
I'd love to know who put that in a can that's or in a little jar. That's pretty amazing stuff. I also, Phil Sims has told me he invented the back shoulder throw. Phil's like, if you look back, with a back shoulder throw is something I invented when I was with the New York Giants. All right, Phil. I love Phil. Always shy with his opinion. I want to know who invented avo toast. Who was the guy who was like, avocados and toast. Let's do it. Salt, pepper, maybe some bagel seasoning. Anyway, do you know what the difference between Bill Belichick and Andy Reid is? Now, you could say that Bill Belichick and Andy Reid, same guy, in that for a long period of time, they both won consistently in the NFL. The difference, and this would be a fair critique, okay? The difference is that in Philadelphia, they had Donovan McNabb. And McNabb's good. He's good. He was never a great quarterback. He wasn't. He was athletic. He was strong. He didn't get hurt often. He had a good arm. He was accurate enough. But there was nothing. He's fine. He was good. He's a good player. Tom Brady is a great player. So sometimes the difference between winning, you know, what was it, 5 years and six, they got to the NFC Championship game, and then 1 year they got to the Super Bowl. Sometimes the difference is, like, one team has an all-time great quarterback, the other team has Tom McNabb, a good quarterback, just not that super elite-level guy. But what we saw Sunday, and I know that Belichick, in his two Super Bowl losses to the Giants, okay, it was about pass protection. I understand, which is a big issue, big part of why the Kansas City Chiefs, okay, succumbed to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The difference is that Belichick's entire mentality is, what does it take to win this game? What does it take? Whereas Andy Reid, it felt like on Super Bowl Sunday, we're going to do what we do, and that's what we do, and they're going to stop. And if they can stop us, then they beat us. And there was no true adjustments to what was going on in the game. It was more, let's just call more plays, get in better position, figure it out, run our plays within what they're doing, what we want to do. Like, you can't block them. You have to make a change. You have to completely scrap whatever your game plan, what your game plan was flawed, and then completely scrap it very, very early in the process. You should have known. Belichick would have done that. Andy Reid would not. Maybe that's the reason that one guy has been to 9 Super Bowls. The other guy just went to his 2nd, and both have superstar quarterbacks. It's the idea of being pragmatic. Forget what I'm known for. How do we win this particular game? Coming up, Tom Brady winning off the field is in direct correlation to him winning on the field. And I'm talking about recruiting next in the herd.